I don't feel so great. I almost got sick.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 15, Escape from L.A. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and me, David T. Cole.
Hello, Dave.
Hi, Tara.
As our Patreon supporters already heard in our Friday episode about North Shore starring Shannon Doherty, Sarah is not with us because she has the vid. Sadly,
don't call it the vid.
That's what Jimmy Pardo calls it. Never Not Funny. No. Should I take that again? Do you hate
it that much?
No,
you can keep it in. I just hate it.
All right. I don't ever call it. That's the first time I ever called
it
that.
I hate the Rona.
The Rona. Yes. Well, point being, Sarah's got it, so we wish her a lot of luck, as we do everyone who's had COVID. just fully being Jimmy Pardo today, I guess. Anyway, so Dave very graciously agreed to watch this week's episode and next week's episode, and as he said in the Patreon episode, he's never watched an episode of Melrose Place before, and I feel like you only think that because there are so many people in this season that you have never seen before, because you have watched at least two for Extra Hot Grade.
That aside, I have never actually watched this show. Like, I gotta watch Melrose Place. Here we go.
Yes.
That hasn't happened. And yeah, I put a thing up on my Instagram with a cast photo and just trying to, like, I could not remember anybody's name. I remembered one after the fact, but I remembered, like, Amanda in the moment.
Yes.
But everybody else, I was just like, they look like, you know, this guy's name's Smiley Dan.
Sure.
And that kind of thing. But I, like, again, I have this problem generally.
Right.
But even, like, immediately after watching two episodes in the sitting down, I'm like, I can't remember anybody's name. So it's going to be a fun ride for everybody. It won't be annoying. I'm going to have to describe people, you know, by their actions and what they look like. It doesn't help that two people to me in this show look almost the same.
Yeah.
I had to take a moment, like, which one is this again?
Yeah. I'm wondering if you think if it's either Dan, Dr. Dan, Matt's boyfriend, and Billy, or Billy and Craig.
See, I don't know what that means. Okay, there's one guy.
Yeah.
And he is a doctor. And he's one of the, I don't know what episode we're on, which one it is.
15.
I remember.
Oh,
anyways,
yes.
Spoiler in case this is from the next one. But there's one doctor.
Yeah.
The one that finds out, one of the two that finds out that Marisha Cross has cancer with the
with the
brain scans.
Yep.
And I think he has the guy from Dynasty.
Dynasty? No.
The new Dynasty?
Oh, the new Dynasty. No.
Come on, Tar, keep up. Okay, it's not him?
No, Grant Show is the one who's in the new Dynasty. He's the one whose girlfriend is pregnant, spoiler.
Okay, then who's this guy?
Michael and Jack Wagner. Michael is the one you know.
Jack Wagner.
Oh, I hate
okay.
Michael. He's so smug. He's the one from with the giant bowl of tuna from one of the two episodes of Melrose you saw
so
before.
So I'm thinking
today.
About Jack Wagner.
Yeah, from Gwen Calls
Grant
the Heart.
Grant Show is somebody's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Those are the two that I think look the same. Kind of.
Yeah, Grant Show is also an original cast member. He's been here from the start. So,
there's a little peek on how well this is going to go.
Yeah,
today.
This is going to be great. Before we get into whatever this is, we want to also tell you the 100th episode of our Patreon bonus series is coming up this Friday, June 17th. Again with this episode 100. Let's watch Tori Spelling in Co-Ed Call Girl, one of her most notorious TV movies. Spoiler, but this thing also co-stars not one, not two, not three, four other recurring Melrose Place guest stars. Jerry Ryan.
That guy.
But that's a lady. She's in Picard.
Oh, it's a Star Trek. Yeah, that's right. Okay.
She played Val Madison, the beloved beard, on Melrose. There's also Carmen Argenziano, who played Dr. Levin, the original Wilshire Memorial Chief of Staff. Al Sapienza, Jake's sometime loan shark. And Scott Plank, he has not started his multi-episode arc, but it's coming in episode 17 of this season of Melrose, so get hyped. We will link the YouTube rip of this movie in the show notes, and to hear us talk about that could be me and Sarah, could be me and Dave. We don't know. We're going to record it sometime next week, But join us at patreon.com/againwiththis to hear that and the previous, oh my God, 99 episodes that preceded it. All right, let's get into Escape from LA, starting with our B plot. Megan takes Michael to Las Vegas. And before we get into this, I just want to remind everybody listening, Dave is not only present every time we record, he has passively heard us talk about this. He also edits every episode of the show. So this is going to be a real testament to how much data Dave's brain protects him from retaining because it knows he is not going to need.
All right. So Michael, that's Michael Mancini.
Yep.
Dr. Michael Mancini.
Correct.
And Wendy? No, Megan?
Megan.
I don't know who that is.
She's not on the first page of the cast. That's where you're going to have to click down to all cast
Kelly Rutherford.
And crew. Kelly Rutherford.
Kelly Rutherford has a real I'm on the CW face.
Well, it's funny you should say that because a few years after this, she will play Serena's mother on Gossip Girl,
Bam.
The original.
There you go.
So we pick up with Michael and Megan and Kimberly, where we left off in the last episode. Michael storming in on what sure seems to be Megan and Kimberly in some kind of cahoots. And Megan covers by saying she came over to tell Kimberly that Megan and Michael are in love and there's nothing Kimberly can do to stop it. Michael wants to know why Kimberly even let Megan in. And Kimberly claims she wanted to see what Michael saw in her. And it turns out Michael has the divorce papers on him, a very normal thing to do. And he signs them on the spot saying that Kimberly can go to hell.
You ever watch somebody sign a document and you watch them and you try to figure out what they're actually signing?
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure that was like, it was just like a big O. Mm. And then so it was like his name is like, It was like, oh, squid, squid, squid. You know, so best I can figure out is or almond.
Mm.
I'm just saying,
sure.
Think about it, actors. I know it might take an extra half a second to actually look like you're signing something real.
Mm-hmm.
But these are divorce papers. You want them to stick. Sign your name properly, doctor.
That's right. You can't just look like you're testing the pen.
Yeah, this can't be like a prescription notepad signature. Like, it's got to actually be something that you can, you know, do real.
Shots fired against doctors. Anyway, Kimberly can go to hell. Megan and Michael are going to Vegas. So the next night, Kimberly meets with Dr. Howard Stein, not Stern. The numbness in her hands is getting worse, but she's not as dizzy. Lack of energy is hard to get used to. Lady, if you can't enjoy couch life when you are dying of brain cancer, I simply cannot help you. But anyway, based on the results of her most recent blood work, Dr. Stein wants her to have another MRI, but she is done with tests. It's time for her to say goodbyes, starting with Dr. Stein. And she intends to die on her own terms and very bravely stares into the middle distance for a while.
Kind of rude.
Yeah.
And the doctor, I wanted a reaction shot. The doctor, like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm trying to help you.
I mean,
you
know,
fine.
Like, I didn't give you the cancer.
Right. So, some number of days later, Megan and Michael are drunkenly returning to their Vegas hotel room when she gets Michael to say he loves her during foreplay. Like, what's he gonna say? She asks him to marry her right now, and he wants to get laid, so he agrees. And part of Peter really feeling himself as a doctor again apparently means he's gonna start consulting on cases at no one's request, like Kimberly's. Peter tells Dr. Stein he saw Kimberly saying goodbye the other day and was hoping Dr. Stein would, you know, put her private shit on blast out of professional courtesy to him. And he claims Kimberly brought him an MRI recently for a second opinion, and Dr. Stein snits that since Peter isn't a surgeon, brain surgeon, he wouldn't know what to tell someone in such terrible condition, and Peter's like, got it! So then, in Vegas, Michael and Megan are in bed, celebrating their marriage, her first, apparently, in case anyone's writing a book. He thinks she's better than all the other Mrs. Mancinis, but their joy is short-lived when Peter calls to tell Michael about Kimberly. Dun, dun, dun! That's where we leave these idiots. Dave, anything to add?
No, just that I didn't buy that they were in Vegas for a moment.
Oh,
nothing
yeah,
about
no.
that set looked like it was in Vegas. There's a certain quality to a Vegas hotel room that they did not capture.
Yes, although I will say there's an episode of Pam and Tommy where they go to Vegas and the shittiness of this hotel suite matched the shittiness of that one. So there might have just been like one Vegas suite on the lot
right.
that everyone used.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Or still use
it. It just pretends like at the Stardust or one of those ones they
yeah.
just demolished. Not quite on the strip, not quite downtown. They're just like, Sarah, sure.
Yeah. So in our A plot, we have basically everyone else. Two attempted reunions, Craig's big secret, Sam and Billy going strong, tough times for Jane and Sydney, and Allison feels sick in the morning. Huh, crazy. At the store, Jane patiently lets Sam prattle on about how great things, including sex, are with Billy. Sam realizes she sounds like she's bragging, but Jane is like, it's fine. I have dated a person before. So then Billy comes to pick Sam up, and Jane lets her go early, and she's about to lock up. But in the time it takes her to turn around for her keys, a sketchy guy slips in.
A ne'er-do-well.
Indeed. In a T-shirt.
And the T-shirt was like, I don't know, something like slightly German or something. It had, the letters had pointed tops, so you know that's bad news.
That's right. You can see them in the visual.
That might have been the Ironwood font, for all we know.
So she tells this ne'er-do-well that they're closed, but he brings a couple of soaps to the cash while she tells him again, we are closed.
Yeah.
But they're open to him because he's got a gun, which, who robs an apparel store that definitely mostly does credit card transactions, even in the 90s? Mm-hmm. Honest to God.
Yeah.
This guy, who also gags and ties Jane with her own scarves before wandering out. And much
not
as
much
I,
of a gag.
Well, that's the thing. Much as I did when we were supposed to think that Kimberly spent hours tied to a bed frame with a couple of silk scarves.
Like, okay, if he gags her.
Yeah.
And then he leaves. If she actually tried to say something, it would sound like this. Oh, no, please don't rob me. Like, there was nothing behind that gag.
Or you can at least still, you can still scream.
Yeah.
Even if you can't say words.
She could definitely do the Gettysburg Address, the Lord's Prayer, whatever you got. That right. gag wasn't stopping her.
But to get back to the scarves, they're silk, or at least they're silky. They're not going to stay tied. Like, just wiggle your hands.
Yeah.
You're going to be fine, but Jane is too scared to think clearly and also an idiot. So then the obviously early to mid-90s B-roll takes us into Billy and Sam in his bed, schmooping around when Sydney calls to blame Sam for the robbery. Brooke Langton, who plays Sam, could have used another take on this reaction. Clip two.
Oh, my God. Oh, no. Is she okay?
That sounds okay. Here's my pitch. Yeah. Okay, let's just pretend that you haven't been listening to this episode. Well,
right.
I'm now going to play you a clip of Busy Phillips from Girls Five Ever. Here we go.
Oh my God. Oh no. Is she okay?
That is the perfect analogy. You're so right. It's exactly the energy she's not bringing to this. So Sam offers to rush over, but Jane only wants to see Sherry, and Sydney does not want to see Sam. So when Jane comes out and asks if Sherry's called, Sam has to say no, but then Sherry's at the door. Sydney snits that Jane's in the bedroom and that she'll check if Jane still wants to see Sherry, as though there was any doubt. And this is also where you can see, and you can see this in the visual aids, the shoulder pads on Sherry's sweater are so aggressive that she has like a little purse on one shoulder and it's like in a divot.
I thought you were going to say the shoulder pads were also a little purse. And you just open up the shoulder pads and you put... That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Like you have like basically like a jacket with the shoulder pad. But the shoulder pad is sort of like also like a coin purse. It kind of
pops
open. Yeah,
like cargo shorts for your sweater.
Kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's not the worst idea I've heard today.
So then Sydney has to stand there in the hall while Jane closes the bedroom door in her face and loses me forever. And then Allison comes out in the morning feeling sick. Huh, crazy. Jake thinks it's probably just exhaustion from too many shifts because he's never possibly gotten anyone pregnant in his many years of fucking lots of women. She hopes they didn't do too much damage to their friends. They're kind of like their extended family, which, like, are you still talking about Jane and Billy? Get on with your lives. But Jake promises on his way out to fix things with Billy. Billy's fucking a new girl. He is fine. But anyway, having given Allison the day off, Jake goes across the way to get Matt to cover for her. And when the camera cuts to Matt and his regretful past, we can see Matt has an obvious black left eye. And Jake kind of laughs. What happened to you? Because speaking of forgetting, Jake has forgotten. He warned Matt about how controlling Dan is like three episodes ago. Matt claims he was helping Dan with a patient who got out of hand. And when Dan appears beside Jake and Matt reminds Jake that they recently met, Jake seems like he might be realizing something. And once he's gone, Matt tries to get rid of Dan. Chuckling and not sounding apologetic, Dan agrees there's no defending what he did. It'll never happen again. He'll do anything to make it up to Matt, starting with dinner at Kyle's the next night.
Sidebar. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that everybody's store is just their name. Yeah. Possessive. Yeah.
Exactly. They thought about this for seconds.
Yeah. It's like when you have a character, it's also the actor's name, so nobody gets confused. Yes.
The Tony Danza rule. Anyway, Dan has a surprise.
Like, they go to McDonald's, and they're like, McDonald's is waiting there right for them to have a chat.
That's right. Anyway, if Matt doesn't come, Dan will understand, but he loves Matt and always will, and Matt glares. Over to D&D by night. Amanda takes a call from the rejuvenated hotshot surgeon, Dr. Peter Burns. She looks pleased to hear from him, but she's working and she can't talk. And he asks if they can meet somewhere, not Kyle's, he is careful to add, and start putting their marriage back together. She wants to, but she's emotionally tapped out. Like, maybe you need to talk to that therapist you found for Peter. Just a thought. But she promises to call him. And as soon as she's hung up, Craig wanders in to hassle her and confirm they are still going out later that week. And the next day, Sydney and her big, big, real big hair are back at Carter's, suggesting that the two of them do something fun that day. He is shooting pool using the weirdest translucent balls I ever did see. Dave, I wanted your comment on these in particular.
I've never seen those before. I feel like they would mess with you playing them.
Yes.
Like, you never quite get the definition of where the edge is necessarily. Mm-hmm. And it's very important because pool is basically a game of geometry.
Right.
So you want to make sure you are hitting exactly where you need to be hitting.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's not why they're there. They're there because somebody is showing off in a weird way.
Yeah.
You know, like when somebody has a giant geode in their living room, you're like, all right.
Yes. Their geode must be acknowledged.
It must be acknowledged.
And you can see, because there's a picture of these weird balls in yeah. the visual aids. That
see that guy's balls? They're weird.
A lot of Happy Gilmore. Oh, wait, that was Billy Madison. A lot of early Adam Sandler acknowledgments. Anyway, when you look at the picture in the visual aids, the names, the numbers are like spelled out in letters.
Yeah.
Like it has 11, like ELE.
When you were a kid, because sometime in the 70s or late 60s, there was a trend where people, instead of putting house numbers, they would get the fancy fully written. Like, I live at 11, like 611 whatever street. Mm-hmm. And it would all be like cursive 611 on the thing. And that, I thought, when I saw one of those back in my shitty hometown of Thorold, Ontario, I thought those people were rich.
Yeah.
I thought rich people had those house signs, which is really funny now because they're trashier than the rest of us.
They look so dumb too.
They look so bad. They take up so much space.
Yeah.
You have to put them somewhere way out of the because, you know, you got 611.
Yeah.
Or you have 611 mm-hmm. is usually how it would be written out.
Right.
And so they end up putting it like at the apex on the front of the house because this is the only mm-hmm. spot to put this like giant, you know, fridge magnet of the front of your home.
Mm-hmm.
It was just chaos.
Yeah.
Eventually, they would have to break down and also have 611 in number somewhere, in which case, why did you bother with the cursive?
It's
podcast
great.
Over. Thanks for coming out.
It's the first thing that gets changed when you gentrify the neighborhood, when you buy this house from the first owner who bought it in 1969.
Right.
Anyway, back to the episode.
Yeah.
Carter says the staff will make them lunch and then they can make plans to go out another day. And then Walter appears to call Carter away for an online conference. Ooh, the cutting edge of businessing. But Carter lets Sydney finish the thought that Walter interrupted, which is she was hoping they could go out for lunch and he can't, but promises they'll have fun at home.
Is Walter Cyborg's dad from Doom Patrol?
Maybe. He's Jackie Chiles from Seinfeld.
Wait, really?
Yeah. No, but he is in Young Justice. He is.
Yeah, he is.
He is the guy from Doom Patrol. Sorry.
Okay.
Good eye, Dave.
Thank you.
Then Carter takes a call, but then he sees Sydney's leaving and tries to stop her. He really has fun with her and he doesn't want to lose their friendship. But she says he should call when he can give her an uninterrupted hour. But before she can leave, Walter runs out and says he thinks that Carter needs her. It's not worth it to Sydney to wait for Carter to get off the phone or computer or whatever. But Walter has access to discretionary funds and they would compensate her. And Sydney narrows her eyes at him like the former sex worker she is and says she's going to pretend he did not say that. Then over to the drugstore. Sam's filling a prescription when she sees Allison, who is inspecting a pregnancy test box, which, if you're going to be buying a pregnancy test on TV, you know someone's going to be there that you know that you don't want to know about your maybe pregnancy.
And if you have to choose just one brand of TV pregnancy test, make mm-hmm. sure it is accurate.
Yes, exactly.
Because you know what you're getting.
That's right.
You're not going to get that one where you pee on it. There's just this hand that's going,
Yes, it's the shrug emoji.
It's a dog with like the shrug thing. Like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know what I'm getting.
So Allison quickly hides the box when Sam comes over, but too late. And then Allison weirdly smirks when the prescription that Sam is filling turns out to be for the pill. Like, she's a single woman in her 20s in Los Angeles. Obviously, she's on the pill. But Sam asks weird about it, which doesn't seem credible either. Anyway, Allison says it's
But
great.
Wait, doesn't the doctor say something like, you have to take these on a regular basis or they
yes.
don't work? Like, thank
yeah.
you for letting me know about the pill.
Yeah, seriously. I'm 30. Anyway.
Yeah, they go in your mouth.
Take them with water or yeah. some other liquid.
Yeah, yeah. Don't put them up your stuff.
I mean, you could try. Allison says it's great that
Don't
Billy's...
put it in your stuff. Don't put it in your stuff.
Crossover. Listen to the Extra Hot Great Patreon to find out what that's a reference
Sorry.
To. Back to this episode. Allison says it's great that Billy's seeing someone like Sam, and she would be grateful if Sam did not blab about the pregnancy test. But Sam thinks there's nothing more private than what a girl buys in a drugstore, I guess. Over to Shooters that night, Jake brings free drinks to Sam and Billy because he thought he would make things better between him and Jake. While Billy points the wrong face at her, Sam toasts to friendship, and Billy's like, to friends, in his high, sarcastic voice. So Jake changes the subject to Matt in a gleeful, gossipy way that does confirm he may have put shit together with regarding Matt and Dan, but is wildly off tone for the situation. Clip 3.
He's got this big, huge shiner, and then there's this guy he's seeing?
Dan.
Oh, there's something off about that guy.
I don't know. We saw him at the auction, but we really haven't met him.
We're having dinner with him tonight at Kyle's, but I'm sure everything's fine.
Check it out.
Thanks.
You're discussing whether your very good friend might be in an abusive relationship. Like, why is everyone so chirpy and casual about it?
Yeah, all right. Check it out.
Anyway, this is also when we discover that Dan's surprise for this dinner that he has set up with Matt is with Billy and Sam, like them? Why? And why is that supposed to be an inducement that proves you really want the relationship to work? These two? Anyway, back to the complex. Sherry checks in on Jane, who still has not been back to the store. Sherry wants to do for Jane what she did for herself at her lowest, say that Jane needs to get dressed, go with her to the shop, and face whatever scares her. Jane refuses, but Sherry insists, physically pulling Jane up off the couch until Jane yells at her that she's not like Sherry, which is when Sydney walks in and kicks Sherry out. Sherry's coat in the scene is fab, by the way. You can see it in the visual aids. It's the best part of the scene. And after she's left, Sydney snits that she doesn't know why Sherry doesn't just leave Jane alone. Over to Kyle's, where Dan is also selling the Black Eye story to Billy and Sam while Matt gets drunk at the table and forgets to act like he cares about his dining companion's beautiful love story. Clip 4.
It's been coming on for a while now.
Yeah, we've been hot and heavy for about a week.
Yeah, that's a while, I guess, in soap opera time. Billy offers more wine. Dan puts his hand in front of Matt's glass, saying that Matt has had enough, and everyone's like, okay, dude, and Dan backs off as Billy tops up Matt's glass, and they have this exchange. Clip 5.
I'm sorry. Of course it happened. I mean, I'm the drunk here, and why am I preventing Matt from having a good time?
Well, we better get used to each other. We're going to be in pretty close company from now on.
Oh, you're moving in together. That's great.
Yeah, well, we were having a drink before you guys showed up, and I suggested it, and Matt decided to make an honest man out of me.
Oh, it's quick.
I feel like these two have been moving in together like 12 times since Dan has come into the picture, but whatever. That's where things stand with them now. And
why
Billy
would Dan ever
them.
Choose Matt as a roommate when he has the bear? I mean, if you had to choose between Matt and Fun Chimp, I'm going Chimp.
Yeah.
More fun.
Depends what you want out of it, I guess. The chimp would certainly be easier to control than Matt, probably.
I'll fuck a chimp.
elsewhere.
Can that be the promo? I'll fuck a chimp.
Sure.
Okay.
Elsewhere, Sydney takes a seat at the bar and catches Kyle up on her latest drama when he asks her about it. And while Kyle is nicely listening, Taylor comes out of the kitchen and clenches up as though she has any right to with all of her baloney, but then interrupts to send Kyle back to the kitchen, briefly glare at Sydney, and follow Kyle back to the range to continue yelling at him about all of the attention he pays Sydney.
I have a question about Taylor.
Sure.
And I guess this is really a question about Lisa Rinna.
Yeah.
That hair?
Yeah.
It might be a head of hair that's actually thicker than yours. Is it real? That hair?
I'm sure it's real at this point.
Because it looks like... Right. I'm not quite sure how to describe it, but it looks like... Like anime hair in a way, like something like she has Dragon Ball Z hair. That's exactly what it is. She has hair that looks like it goes on a character from something where they shoot beams and stuff out of their eyes and people have power ratings. That is the sort of hair she has.
Right.
And it's crazy.
Well, this was a very chic hairstyle. There were a bunch of different versions of it, but this is like the Sally Hershberger chop where it was like it was supposed to be sort of crazy and messy and you know, this is a more sedate version of it. Meg Ryan had the more chaotic
You know that painting, that wall painting style where you see the brush strokes and it's all very fat and each one goes a different direction and it's all it's just like that but a hair style. It's
but
crazy.
But she still has it. And I'm pretty sure now when you see her on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and we've discussed this before, I'm sure she wears a wig now.
Sure.
Not because there's anything wrong with her hair, but it's just easier, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's her trademark. Anyway, then Peter's going to Amanda's office to ask how they get back together. She does still love him, but just when it seemed like things were getting back to normal, he seemed to turn into someone different. Clip six.
Oh, come on, Amanda. I was always still me, and I always still loved you.
That is not the point. What scared me was that you reminded me of... my father. A man who lied as easy as breathing, who only thought of himself and could never be counted on, and who ultimately was weak. And all the good that you and I had together seemed like a dream. And when I woke up, I was face to face with a man who was just as self-absorbed and weak as my father. I just can't believe in someone like that.
Well, I never met your father, but I know who I am. I'm your husband and I love you. And you can count on me and you can trust me.
Honestly, I don't know if that's true.
Oh, for God's sake, Amanda, this is our marriage, our life we're talking about.
I don't want to talk about this anymore, all right? Just please leave me alone.
Here's why I know they're in trouble.
Yeah.
He says still always twice.
Mm.
If it's always, you don't have to say still.
You're right. It's probably just he went up on his line and they did not have time for another take. But I just want to say, where is this dad shit coming from? Her dad was killed in season three. It was almost, it was over 2 years ago that episode aired. Like, he has not been mentioned since then. Like, I don't know where this dad shit is coming from all of a sudden, but it's in the next episode too, and I don't know why. Moving on. Jane does make it back to the store the next day. She decided Sherry was right and she did need to face her fears. Sydney offers to close early and take Jane home, but Jane claims that she is fine. And then Sydney goes to the back for something. And when Jane is alone on the floor and hears the bell on the door chime, the score gets worried and she looks triggered. But the people entering the store are Mr. and Mrs. Andrews. And she fucking finally acts like she loves them and is grateful they came to look after her.
It's the White Shadow.
That's right. And Mrs. Shadow. And over Jane's shoulder, Mrs. Andrew mouths a thank you to Sydney. And it is sweet. And it's more than Jane deserves. I mean, I know she got held up at gunpoint, but she's been a real asshole. That night, Amanda's getting Craig drunk at Shooters in a booth with an improbably funky multicolored pepper grinder you can see in the visual aids.
I miss that.
It's really like, I just don't believe Jake bought that.
Like Joseph's pepper shaker?
I don't know what that is.
It's like this Technicolor Dreamcoat, except this
Exactly. Craig makes a dumb joke about the role reversal in terms of who's getting whom drunk, adding that he hopes that Amanda takes advantage of him later. And she changes the subject.
Hang on. That was a really weird. That really stood out to me.
Yeah.
The gender roles of getting one drunk is something I've never actually considered. Like,
yeah.
Just get like you get drunk. It seems to be something that is entirely under your own power.
Well, what we know about this guy is that he is a borderline sexual assailant. So this is him telling on himself why he gets women drunk.
This show is full of ne'er-do-wells.
So true. Anyway, Amanda changes the subject back to what Craig's blackmail material might be, chirping that she's just trying to learn something from him. And he's not so far gone that he doesn't know she thinks he's an idiot, which she smoothly denies. And if he trusted her, they might be even closer, she hints. She will not go so far as to confirm that if he tells her, she will fuck him, but the possibility, it is dangled. So he finally comes out with the whole, all the shit he has on his terrible dad. This clip is long, but it's the whole story. Clip 7.
It's a murder. That's what it is. Talk about skeletons in the closet, huh?
Your father killed someone?
Shh. Yeah. My grandpa. My mom's dad. He had all the money, the companies, everything. My father worked for him, and they hated each other. But grandpa had everything in the will for mom and dad. I was 12. We were up at the lake. And I was gonna go fishing with my grandpa. So I went over there to meet him at the boathouse. And my dad was already there with him. And they were arguing. And my dad hit him. He hit him so hard that my grandpa hit his head on the piling. And I shouted out. And my dad turned and stared at me with one of his looks. Like a cornered animal. And I didn't say anything to him. I just helped my father put Grandpa in the boat.
My God.
When they found the body, they ruled it as an accidental drowning. From that day on, my father ran the company. He divorced my mother. I mean, he told me that whatever he did for us, for me, and that I was part of it, that it was our secret.
And you've kept that secret all this time.
Yeah. I never had anybody I could trust before.
God, that had to be a faster way to tell that story.
Yeah, you still don't have somebody you can trust, buddy. And if you were not so drunk, you would know that. But I just want to say two things. One, in terms of the story part where Grandpa hit his head on the piling and then died, the last context I have for seeing something like that is having recently watched Weekend at Bernie's for the Patreon of our sister podcast, Listen to Sassy. Uh-huh. Listen to sassy.com/club. And there's a scene, if you remember this fine comedy film of the 1980s, where Bernie, who at this point is dead, is being dragged behind a motorboat through some, a little waterway.
Yeah.
And they get too close to some pilings and his corpse hits every friggin' one. So I don't want to laugh at this sad story about Craig's dead grandpa, sure. But yikes.
Is that how they got around rigor mortis in Weekend at Bernie's?
No.
Okay, because that would be a great plot device.
Yes,
it would.
Oh,
he's too stiff. We can't fake it anymore. Bang, 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 break, 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 break. Oh, look how bendable he is. Mm-hmm. He has so many more points of articulation now.
It's true.
High five.
Also, based on the version of this story that Craig tells, not to split hairs, but other than the cover-up part, it sounds more like manslaughter than murder to me.
Mm. Yeah.
Just saying. Mm-hmm. Back to Jane's place, where Mrs. Andrews is tucking Jane into bed. Finally, Jane manages to tell her mother she's sorry about everything she put her parents through, and Mrs. Andrews is more gracious about it than Jane deserves. Jane is also amazed that Sydney called and told them to come.
You guys hate Jane, eh?
Yeah, she's been a real dick in this plot line.
Okay.
But she's also just kind of useless.
Just gauging the temperature here.
Mm-hmm. Jane's also amazed that Sydney called and told their parents to come, given how mean Jane has also been to Sydney. And Mrs. and Mr. Andrews are prepared to stay in L.A. for as long as Jane needs and help her bring Sherry into her life, because Jane is Mrs. Andrews' daughter, regardless of her genes, like we've been saying. And after Mrs. Andrews poured her heart out, Jane announces she doesn't want to stay in L.A. She wants to go home to Chicago with her parents. And that's that. And I have no idea what Josie Bisset would be doing that she would need a sabbatical for. Based on her IMDb, my best guess is it was the 1998 TV movie Baby Monitor : Sound of Fear. That's real.
Is that like found footage supernatural?
Oh, a Paranormal Activity.
Paranormal Activities.
Yeah, no, I wish. Here's the actual description. A neglectful mother, great start, overhears her husband on the telephone at their workplace talking with their babysitter. She discovers they are having an affair and are going to have a baby. She concocts an evil plan to win back her husband and remove the girl and baby. Two men are hired to kill the girl and hold the son hostage in order for her to play the hero and reclaim her husband. The plan hits a snag when the criminals enter the wrong apartment. Damn, that actually sounds really good. So it is on YouTube. We may talk about it in a future again with this. So get on that Patreon. The next morning, Sherry and Ed come to Jane's, and Sydney has to make introductions between them and her dad. Sydney is kind of a bitch about it, but the adults are, you know, adults. And Sherry is hoping to see Jane one last time, probably regrets it when she sees that Jane is in a beret, but they go out to the courtyard where Sherry makes sure Jane knows that Sherry loves her no matter what. Jane loves her too and tells her about moving, and Sherry is tearfully grateful that Jane has the parents she really needs. And before she and Ed leave, Mrs. Andrews comes out. Clip 8.
I just want to thank you for my daughter. No, I'm the one who's grateful. I'm so happy for her that you love her so much. Will you write to me sometime? She has the address.
Yes.
Yes, we'll all be in touch, I promise. Thanks. Bye. Bye.
Moms! But... this is Queen Donna Mills. We can't see her looking defeated as she leaves. Just an ad before the clip.
Oh, moms. Some are good. Some are bad. Moms.
Anyway, we can't see Sherry defeated as she leaves, so we get this little coda to the scene. Clip 9.
So, are you okay?
I think so. And I also think this would be the perfect time for you guys to marry.
It is it?
That's right, big guy. And the answer is yes.
How many marriage or divorce storylines are going on in this one episode? 4?
Yeah.
Too much.
Mm-hmm.
Too much revolving around marriage or breakup thereof.
Yeah.
Figure out some other thing for these people to do. Why isn't one of them a spy? Or something. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Gotta mix it up.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the soap.
We never saw Sherry again. That's a wrap on Donna Mills.
All right. They closed the mill.
They did. And then we're at Dan's, where Billy
no
has
more
just...
trouble at the mills.
Over to Dan's. Billy has just finished loading in the last of Matt's stuff.
I have some general thoughts about mills. You know, my general mills.
Yeah, I got it. Seems like before moving all of Matt's stuff in would be the time to have this conversation, but it's Billy. Yeah. He's an idiot. Mm-hmm. Clip 10.
Matt, I care about you, and so does Jake and everybody else back at the building. And we're a little worried, okay, because I saw Dan's hand at dinner the other night, and the way he's acting towards you.
You figure that he's beating me up, is that it?
That's it, all right. And your friends are concerned about it.
You know what? Billy, thank you very much for taking the day off of work to help me move. Now leave.
I know you, and you would not be this defensive if there wasn't some truth to what I'm saying.
No, that's it. Yeah, sure. No, Dan's using me like a punching bag, and I just stand there and I take it because I'm some wimpy little queer, right?
Come on, I'm
No, you know what? I want you to leave. And you can tell the people back at the building I don't need them talking about me behind my back. I don't need their concern.
So during this exchange, we cut to another part of the house where Dan is, like, lurking in the shadows, eavesdropping on all this, because Dan is bad news, as we know. As usual, Andrew Hsu's tone is completely wrong for this conversation.
Yeah, I was trying to figure it out. Like, does he just have one mode? I know
yes.
You guys have bagged on his acting.
He is a bad, bad actor.
Yeah. He seems a little out of touch with the emotional center of this scene.
You are correct. That is also true of every other scene he has been in ever. Except when he's supposed to just be a goofy jock idiot, which is what he is.
Great.
Anyway, Billy does not seem convinced as he leaves. So when Dan steps out of his hiding place, he has notes. Clip 11.
With all the sarcasm you're using, you forgot to ever deny it.
Well, it's sort of hard to do when it's the truth. I was embarrassed, okay? I'm sorry.
No, you're forgetting I'm the one that's going to be professionally embarrassed if it got out.
Dan, let go of me, okay?
Not until you agree that you've got to be more discreet.
No, I will talk the way I talk, okay? What is wrong with you?
Hey,
you
shut up! Just shut up!
What, are we going to round three? Go ahead, take your best shot.
Dan shoves him. He breaks a glass coffee table.
Sorry, Matt. Hey, I'm sorry.
You can't let me get like this. Go ahead. I know how you feel. Go ahead, do it.
No, I am not like you. I am not like you at all.
Real Emperor Palpatine energy there. Do it.
It's true.
Let the hate flow through you.
So then, at the airport with her family, Jane says she wishes she could have said goodbye to people at the building before they left. And Sydney shrugs that you can't have everything because their neighbors are at the gate with a "We'll miss you, Jane" banner they made at some point. She hugs each of them in turn, Jake last, and then says goodbye to Sydney, just giving her the store in the process. Retail, 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 retail. They hug. Sydney saying she's glad Jane is back in their family. Jane claims she never left, or rather that Sydney never left her, and she's grateful. And Sydney cries beautifully, as always. And the way the show gives Jane a tearful slow-mo jetway walk makes me think they believe we care about her much more than we do. But anyway, bye! We'll see you back here in early season 7, Jane. This is not goodbye forever. And that's the episode. Now that we're at the end, which are the two guys that you thought were the same guy?
Jack Wagner.
Yes.
As Dr. Peter Burns.
Yes. And Jake.
And Grant Show as okay. Jake Hansen.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought Jack Wagner was Jake Hansen, apparently.
Okay.
Or Jack Wagner was Grant Show. I don't know. Okay. I'm so confused now.
All right.
There's so many just white dude names here.
It's true.
That, like, between the actors and the characters. Jack, Peter, Andy, Billy, Jake, Grant, Doug, Matt. Like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's get some, like, at least three-syllable names going. That's all I'm asking for.
Yeah.
Three-syllable dude names. Let's do it, Melrose.
All right, let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Dave?
I'm going to go with Dr. Howard Stein for being professional enough not to tell Kimberly to go fuck herself when she was being mean for just delivering empirical data to her. And, and you know, his bedside manner wasn't bad. It was just matter of fact. Everybody already knew what the score was, that she's terminal. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I think he was fine and she was a jerk. So I'm giving it to him for rising above it.
Fair enough. I'm going to say Amanda because she went to Shooters with a mission, which was to get this blackmail story out of Craig. And she did. And that was the one plot point she needed to advance this week. And she did. She had to put off Peter, but there it is. Least valuable player. Okay. I feel like Dan is the obvious choice. Of course, Dan is the actual most terrible one. He's the abusive partner. But I'm still, instead, because that's too obvious, I'm going to say Billy for sucking at his relationship intervention, and also Andrew Hsu secondarily for sucking at acting that intervention.
All right. Well, I'm going to do the flip of the doctor. I'm going to give least valuable player. I'm going to do the flip of the doctor. I'm going to give least valuable player to the pharmacist who explains to women how to use the pill.
Yeah.
Because that was some bullshit.
Well, I mean, they are supposed to tell you, but presumably he has filled this prescription for her before.
Yeah.
Like, usually they say, have you had this before? And you say yes. And then they're like, all right, then you know. Yeah. So, yeah, ridiculous. Next time, Jake learns about Allison's pregnancy. Peter learns about Dan's abuse. Sydney learns the shop's running on fumes. And Craig learns exactly how far he can push his dad. You can learn more about us at our website, again with this 90210.com. It is where you can find links to the visual aids we do for each episode, ordering information for a very special 90210 book, which Sarah and I wrote, and more. You can also get even more of us by supporting us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/againwiththis for 4 bonus episodes every month, regardless of your level of support. Plus, if you're at the $5 level, our monthly Again With Them digests, where we talk about Jenny and Tori's terrible podcast, 90210MG. Thank you, listeners, and thank you, Dave.
You're welcome. Is that it?
Yeah.
We're done?
Yep.
Thank you, Tara.